When we hear about a traumatic situation, it's easy to project what we would say or do under the same circumstances. And I think we can all acknowledge those kinds of projections aren't fair, because everyone handles trauma differently. That said, there are certain standards of behavior that we all agree should be met. Today's episode explores that space between what we assume people would do and what we agree people should do. Detective Wren.
At approximately 12:30 a.m., Ruth Ivanoff awoke in the guest room at Ivan Michael's residence. She said she awoke because she sensed something was wrong. She went to Ms. Michael's bedroom and discovered the door was locked. At this time, she called the victim's psychiatrist, Robert Stowe, and asked him to come over. Dr. Stowe arrived at approximately 1:15 a.m.
How do you know the defendant arrived at 1:15?
Both Ms. Ivanoff's and Dr. Stowe's statements informed us so, and the security footage verified the time of arrival.
The security camera shows Dr. Stowe entered the house through Ava's front door and remained inside for several minutes. He then exited the house through the back door and went to peer into Ava Michael's bedroom window. Throughout the trial and in the media, it's referred to as her window. However, it was actually one of two French doors. It was through one of these doors that Dr. Stowe peered into Ava's bedroom.
Dr. Stowe had brought a fire poker from the house when he entered Ava's backyard. When he looked in Ava's bedroom window, according to Dr. Stowe, he saw Ava in her bed, face down on her pillow, with her phone clutched in her hand. She was not moving.
What did he do next?
He picked up the poker and broke the window next to the handle of the door. Dr. Stowe then reached through and opened the door from the inside. After gaining entry, he went to Ava and discovered she was dead.
Did he attempt any life-preserving measures?
No.
Detective Wren, did the defendant explain to you why he did not employ, well, any life-preserving measures?
Yes. He said that she was too far gone.
Uh-huh. Did he use the term livor mortis when explaining why he didn't attempt, life-preserving measures?
Yes.
Livor mortis is also known as hypostasis. It refers to the blood pooling in the body when the heart is no longer circulating the blood. This blood pooling appears as dark spots or small patches of discoloration on the skin. Dr. Stowe, a psychiatrist but also a medical doctor, said he was able to tell from a brief examination that Ava had been dead for at least 2 hours, and as such, he did not attempt CPR.
After discovering Ava was dead, Dr. Stowe admitted Ruth Ivanoff into the bedroom and showed her Ava's body. At this time, they entered what Dr. Stowe described as a period of grief in which they wept and consoled each other. They then went to Ava's kitchen, where they proceeded to pour themselves scotch, whiskey, and drink it. In her interview with police, Ms. Ivanoff said that during this time they lamented about what they could have done differently.
To prevent what?
To prevent Ava from taking her life. That was the belief they stated they were under at the time of their interview.
What did the two do next, according to their interview?
The doctor went into the bedroom, the crime scene, to identify the pills which Ava Michaels ingested.
At this point, no one had called the authorities, correct?
That's correct.
Not the police?
That's correct.
Not an ambulance?
That's correct.
Okay. And how did the doctor state he identified the pills Ava allegedly ingested?
By examining the pill bottles on Ms. Michael's nightstand, he found an empty bottle of Ritalin and a few of salicylic hydrate.
What are those drugs?
Ritalin is a barbiturate that had been prescribed to Ava Michaels in large doses throughout her life. It was used along with all her barbiturates to treat her insomnia. Dr. Stowe was a proponent of this drug and its therapeutic effects, though we've discovered session notes indicating he'd been considering weaning Ava off of Ritalin. Regardless, Dr. Stowe would prescribe Ava both Ritalin and salicylic hydrate throughout her treatment. She ingested both on the night she died.
Detective Wren, was Dr. Stowe the only doctor who regularly prescribed her barbiturates?
No, Dr. Carroll was Ava Michaels' GP, and he also prescribed her barbiturates, though from our records, not as frequently as Dr. Stone.
Mm-hmm. So, sometime after 2 a.m., Dr. Stowe went into Ava's bedroom to review the bottles on her nightstand. Did he happen to find a recently filled prescription?
Yes, he found a bottle of Rylotol that had been filled the day before.
And the man who prescribed that bottle, it wasn't Dr. Stowe, was it?
No.
It was Dr. Carroll, wasn't it?
Yes.
So after Dr. Stowe examined this bottle, what did he do?
Dr. Stowe returned to the kitchen and placed a call to Dr. Carroll, Ms. Michaels' general practitioner.
And what time was this?
3 a.m.
Dr. James Carroll.
It was the middle of the night when the phone rang, my landline. I got up and answered the portable, which was across the room, and heard Dr. Stowe's voice on the other end.
What did he say?
He told me that Ava had overdosed and that I should come. He was at her house.
What did you do then?
Of course, I immediately dressed and went to Ava's house. I was admitted by Dr. Stowe and Ruth Ivanov. I brought my bag, but it was unnecessary. The minute I saw her, I knew she was dead. I felt for her pulse, but it was too late.
What was your reaction upon discovering her dead?
I was beside myself. I always felt very fondly towards Ava. She was a nice person. The idea that she'd killed herself was horrifying. No one wants to get that call, especially about one of your patients.
Why do you think Dr. Stowe called you over to her residence?
I didn't know. Without it being a medical emergency, it didn't make sense for me to be there.
Did he ever indicate that he wanted you to confirm she was dead?
Yes, but again, I found this confusing because he was a medical doctor and just as capable to make that determination.
Okay. When you were in Ava's bedroom, was there anything specific Dr. Stowe drew your attention to?
Yes. He pointed out an empty bottle. It was a Rylotol prescription for 25 capsules. I'd written it for Ava that week.
Did he seem to be suggesting that prescription was the one Ava used to overdose?
Yes, even though there were many other bottles around, some empty, some filled, some partially, this fresh prescription was pointed out specifically to me by Dr. Stowe.
So in the fresh aftermath of discovering Ava dead, you were immediately directed to a prescription of yours. Did you feel as though this was a veiled accusation?
I did feel defensive, yes. I told him it was a regular prescription, and he responded by claiming we had an agreement to place her exclusively on salicin hydrate.
Did you?
No, I never made an agreement like that. Yes, we had spoken about Ava's prescription drug use recently, as we had many times in the past. The reason it's important for two doctors to do this is so that we're not overprescribing a mutual patient, especially someone with addictive traits like Ava. We kept in touch about our prescriptions, but there was no shared doc or spreadsheet. There was no system for reporting each and every prescription to one another. And I certainly never told him that I would not prescribe Ava Rylotol. He seemed to believe I was only prescribing Ava salicin hydrate, which I would not agree to do in an effort to curb addiction, as it's also an addictive substance. Besides, I knew far less about salicin hydrate than Rylotol. And so I'd never prescribe it, and I have never prescribed it.
Hmm. Was Dr. Stowe upset during this period in the bedroom?
No, he was very calm. They both were.
Where was Ruth Ivanov?
She was standing in the hallway, watching and listening to us.
Did it seem odd to you that there were no paramedics present?
Yes, absolutely.
Why didn't you call them yourself?
I don't know what I was thinking at the time. It was so bizarre. They called me over in what I thought was an emergency, only it wasn't an emergency, and then I was faced with my own prescription being there, and they were so calm, and there was this bizarre call to duty between the two of them. Like, Dr. Stowe had to make some calls, and Miss Ivanov had to get to work, and I sat there. I sat down in Ava's living room and I think I was in shock.
You say Ruth Ivanov had to get to work. What work was that?
Housework. She was doing housework.
In response to the trial, some spectators voiced an understanding of Dr. Stowe's desire to call another medical professional. But their understanding waned when Dr. Stowe's actions turned away from assessing what happened and toward controlling the optics.
My name is Bernadette Keene.
And what was your relationship with the victim?
I was Ava's East Coast publicist.
Thank you. Have you ever met the defendant, Dr. Stowe?
Yes.
In what capacity did you meet him?
There were a few occasions when I went to Ava's house for a meeting, and one time she came to my office in New York. Dr. Stowe was with her on both of these occasions.
Did you find it odd that Ava was consistently in the company of her psychiatrist?
No, because I didn't know he was her psychiatrist. I thought he was just an associate of some kind. I didn't ask. It's not uncommon for stars that I represent to have some kind of entourage.
What was the purpose of these meetings you had with Ava at which Dr. Stowe was present?
They were PR meetings, discussing strategy, updates, that kind of thing.
And did Dr. Stowe offer input at these meetings?
Yes, he was very opinionated. Ava seemed to rely on the advice of others rather than coming into a room with her own strong point of view. So I would typically lay out a series of options and I'd express my opinion. Others in the room expressed their opinions, and then Ava would decide which way we'd go.
Did you notice that Ava typically followed the advice of Dr. Stowe?
Yes, every time.
Thank you. What happened on the morning of August 5th?
At 3:45 a.m., my phone rang. I answered the call, and it was Dr. Stowe on the other end. He introduced himself as Ava Michael's psychiatrist. Obviously, I was shocked to hear from him in the middle of the night.
What happened then?
He told me Ava was dead, that she killed herself, and that he was concerned about that tarnishing her image. He said he wanted to contain the story as best we could.
How did he sound on the phone?
Tired, sad, gruff.
What do you mean by gruff?
Just, he sounded a bit rough, unhappy.
What was your reaction to this news?
I was shocked, and immediately fully awake. I wasn't that close to Ava personally, but this was huge news.
How did you respond to the doctor's inquiries?
I told him we would have to focus on changing the narrative from a suicide-oriented tabloid storm to a dignified memorial, that I could use my relationships with publications to try and ensure death was covered with an element of dignity. But we certainly couldn't stop the whole world from writing about it. The internet especially would be teeming with gossipy coverage.
At any point, did you tell Dr. Stowe that he should call the authorities?
No. I thought he had called the authorities. I just assumed. It didn't occur to me that he was calling from her deathbed or that the police didn't know.
2 hours into the discovery of Ava Michael's death, Dr. Stowe decided to begin placing calls to publicists. Unlike the call to Ava's doctor, these calls had nothing to do with grief or understanding. These calls were strategic. Calling press agents? Really? Before the police? Make no mistake about the purpose of these calls, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Stowe wanted it in the press that this death had occurred and that it was a suicide. He was trying to control the narrative. He had sat in on PR meetings before. He understood how things worked. He thought that if the public wasn't asking if there was a suicide narrative in place, that less questions would be asked of the police. There would be less demand for an investigation. This was strategy.
Janet Fisher was Ava's West Coast publicist and friend. They had a close relationship, and the news of Ava's death affected her more deeply.
It was horrible. It was 1 a.m. my time, so I hadn't even gone to bed. I was home with my husband, and I got the call, and I just started weeping.
Ms. Fisher, I'm so sorry for your loss. Would you like a glass of water before we move on?
No, thank you.
Okay. Now, Miss Fisher, tell me, did you have a relationship with Dr. Stowe prior to this phone call?
Not really. I think we'd spoken once or twice by phone. Maybe a conference call. I don't remember. I'd never met him, though.
Mm-hmm. What did Dr. Stowe want from you?
He wanted me to start placing calls and requesting specific journalists cover her death. Journalists with whom Ava or I had relationships. It was very businesslike.
Of course. How did you respond?
At first, I was angry. I told him I couldn't even think about work right now. My friend had just died.
Yes. And how did you respond to that?
He told me Ava's fans were the most important things in her life, and that her legacy meant everything to her, and that he didn't want this to turn into a circus.
Mm-hmm. Did that help you see things differently?
Yes, it did. And I agreed to help right away, despite how difficult that was.
Miss Fisher, how did Dr. Stowe want you to shape the narrative in terms of cause of death?
Objection. Leading. Shape the narrative, Your Honor.
I'll rephrase. Miss Fisher, what did Dr. Stowe inform you Ava died of?
Suicide.
And he wanted you to begin commencing memorial coverage immediately?
Yes.
No further questions.
Dr. Stowe cared about Ava, and as a psychiatrist, he understood her better than, well, anyone in this world. Ava's image was everything to her. She didn't have parents. She didn't have siblings. She had her fans. In Ava's most critical hour following her suicide, Dr. Stowe fought to preserve what mattered most to Ava Michaels, her image. She wouldn't have wanted her death to be dissected and sensationalized like Anna Nicole Smith or Amy Winehouse. He wanted dignity for her. Controlling the press was the last way for my client to care for Ava. And that's what he tried to do.
This is Chelsea speaking. Something you might not know about me is how much I love massage. I used to be a massage therapist, and when I was, I'd always end my sessions with a foot massage, because I know how badly we stress our feet day to day and how much we need regular therapeutic massage there. I recently received a box of Bombas socks, and I've been trying them out on hikes and to the store and in general life. I haven't given myself, and this is unusual for me, a single self foot massage since I started using these socks. They address so many needs: arch support, cushioning, staying up without decreasing circulation and leaving marks on your skin. They're just really well-designed socks. Very comfortable, and they look good. I haven't worn any other socks since I've tried Bombas, and I don't want to. And I don't have to, because they make athletic socks and knee-high socks that I can wear under boots, and little slip socks for delicate lady shoes. And they're all really good quality, and the material feels good, which is probably because they're cotton, so they don't make my feet too hot. Please check them out. If you're an athlete or a business person, or if you listen to podcasts every second of the day, how do I get that job? There are socks for you, and they feel yummy, and I feel really good telling you about them. My listeners get 20% off their first order. Thank you, Bombas. And you get that discount by going to bombas.com. That's bombas.com/deliberations and entering promo code deliberations. That's 20% off by going to bombas.com/deliberations and entering code deliberations. Thanks, guys.
You know, I understand that a lot of us are undecided or they think she committed suicide, but we have to remember, and correct me if I'm Rose, correct, Rose, there has to be some reasonable doubt, correct?
There has to be reasonable doubt.
Okay, great. And then, okay, yep. Here's the thing. We have to go by reasonable doubt. If there's a reasonable doubt that this was not suicide, then we have to look at the fact that she is not with us and someone has murdered her. So here's my reasonable doubt that this wasn't suicide. And here's why. He comes in and he doesn't give her any life-preserving measures. Right?
Well, I mean, yes, but he saw the skin.
All right, mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't give her any life-preserving measures, but, I mean, Harriet, he is a doctor. So, you know, he has to attend 4 years of medical school. He knows... Mm-hmm. You know, what it's like to see a dead body, and he can grasp the basics of seeing a dead body.
Okay, I'll give you that. So he and Ruth were so overcome with their grief and lamenting that they had to go and have a drink to calm themselves down, correct? That they were a period of mourning, their testimony, and they were concerned about her dignity and their respect for her. And that she was their personal friend, and they were really lamenting that they had to stop what they were doing and throw all protocol away and go have a drink. But they couldn't share her dignity to cover her naked body with a sheet. Because here's my thing. If my loved one were dead and naked and I'm crying and so torn up, I would, out of respect, cover them with a sheet. Because he's thrown away all other medical decorums about what to do, when to do it, and how. But he can't say, I am so concerned about my dead friend. She's naked here, and I'm concerned about her dignity and respect. I can't cover her with a sheet.
Is the concern the dignity or not taking the life-preserving
measures? Because here's the thing.
Adelaide has been wanting to say something.
Sure, go ahead,
Adelaide. So bring that up.
I personally am really offended that they went and drank when she had died. I mean, I can't believe that.
Couldn't even cover her with a sheet, Adelaide.
That, you know, there she is getting cold in the other room.
And they had to go have a drink. Couldn't
and they had to go get
dignity and respect.
A drink? That's terrible.
Laughing,
but then they
wait,
have
to, okay. What's going on?
No, don't even. Look, I understand how it looks. Drinking alcohol is a way to brace yourselves. Obviously, none of you all are recovering alcoholics as I am. Mm. Yes, I am opening up. My mother died not too long ago.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's all right. The first thing I did, I didn't call anybody. I drank myself into a stupor for at least 2 to 2.5 hours. Straight whiskey, no water. At that point, I think my own life was at risk. So in the fact of connecting with Ava in a dark point, when something like that does happen, I mean, the first thing you want to do is just, you want to drink. Like, nothing else is running through your head. You're a doctor. You already see that she's passed. So you're mourning. The first thing you want to do is grab a bottle and take it to the head.
But here's
he wasn't an alcoholic or recovering alcoholic. He was a doctor who prescribed medications. So that's unnerving.
I just don't understand, you know, I mean, I understand he's never been on a crime scene or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, he's seen TV, he's seen movies. Why would you go back in and mess around with the prescription bottles?
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting? You brought that up too, Mikey, how he is controlling the prescription bottle and doing a whole spin cycle on it. Like, he's calling the press agents and discerning how she must be portrayed in the media as her death of dignity. But he can't put a sheet over her?
You guys, I mean, how does he even think that it is a crime scene? I mean, how does he make that point? You know, when you're thinking of robberies and assaults, if he's innocent and walked in on a suicide, wouldn't he have had the thought to preserve the crime scene? It just kind of says to the fact
but
that...
But he didn't preserve it. He broke a window and put all kinds of new evidence in there.
Right, because he doesn't believe that there is a crime scene. You know, it's a suicide.
Exactly. At the point of the breaking the window part, he's not thinking about preserving anything. He's still trying to see... He doesn't know yet that she's dead, right? So we need to remember that part, just for timeline. We need to understand that he doesn't yet know, so he breaks the window.
He's the last person that we know to see her alive. Remember, her friend was told to go and she left.
That's true.
Ruth didn't see her because she was in her room and they had a 90-minute session. So Dr. Stowe was the last person to see her. Why is it that he assumed, as you said, Kay, that she was it murder? Why would he think that it was so dangerous that I had to break this window to get in there? Because,
well, I mean, when you see somebody face down, you know, lying, not being responsive with pills in their hands, he had to act.
Well, the phone was in the hand.
She's already dead. Why wouldn't he call the police and go, hey, I'm not disturbed the crime scene because she's clearly dead. I can see her.
She had been dead for 2 hours. So what kind of doctor is going to preserve and or perform CPR? That would make him a little bit odd, you know?
I'm just saying it doesn't make any sense, his whole reason for being there and why he was called and all of it.
Go ahead, Mikey. Go ahead.
Two things. First of all, why did he call Dr. Carroll there in the first place if he already knew she was dead? He had her check the pulse. Okay. Therefore, I think that was a ploy to frame him. Also, it said at the beginning he went out side with the fire poker at the beginning. He didn't know what was going on. He just knew the door was locked. Exactly. Why would someone take a fire poker outside before looking in a window and finding someone face down
like
on a bed
knew
with a phone?
Something was going
exactly.
Think you
that's extremely knock, suspicious.
Knock on the door or whatever. Yeah. And then there's another thing. Did anybody catch the fact that Dr. Carroll said that there were some bottles that still had pills in them? If you were going to kill yourself, I'm sorry, you would take everything there was because you would want to make sure it was a done deal.
That's not just necessarily saying.
Dr. Stowe also spoke with Dr. Carroll. Now, we said, what did they speak about? We don't really know, but there were notes, fact, that Dr. Stowe wanted to wean her off of the Rylatol. She had just filled a prescription the day before from Dr. Carroll. When Dr. Carroll was on the testimonial stand, he froze up. He said, I don't know why I called the police. So
well,
Dr.
He, mm-hmm. he didn't know why he, well, he didn't call them call because them. He assumed yeah.
no
that
one called
no
the
one
police.
Called them. He didn't
there
call
was a 3 hour time gap. There.
Once he was on the scene, he could have called the paramedics.
But he didn't know that they hadn't been called.
Oh, because
he knew they hadn't been called because they weren't there, Rose. I mean, you can see it's a dead body there, and she's a star. You would see paramedics.
Well,
and
they may have been
everywhere.
On the way at that point. He didn't even realize that.
So if I'm allowed to finish.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
I just want to say that they said they had a conversation. The facts are that Stowe was weaning her off of the Rylatol, but Carol was the one who had prescribed her something earlier in the week, not the day before. She chose to get them filled the day before, and that pill bottle was empty. Correct?
But there were so many other pills, and if you were going to kill yourself, you would just take them all. If you really wanted to be dead, you would take them all.
What's maybe, also or really you took the amount that you took that killed you, and then you weren't able to take them. But go ahead, Rose.
Thank you.
That is a good point.
What I think is really odd about the pills, and like she would have taken all of them, is also that the housekeeper, Ruth, she starts cleaning up in that room, touching the bottles, you know, moving things. She starts cleaning up. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, they're covering up everything. She does laundry in the middle of the night. It's, what time is it? It's like, what time? The police aren't even there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She starts doing laundry. What's in the bed? What kind of stains are there that we don't even know because she's doing laundry?
Well, we can't speculate about that. Go ahead, Mikey.
I find it weird that when he called the publicists, they said he sounded upset. But then when Dr. Carroll got there, he said Ruth and Dr. Stowe both seemed
calm.
They were calm. Yeah, they were calm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think because they probably knew this was coming. I mean, 4 attempts and this is the final one. I'm sure this isn't
which
a surprise
is the,
to them.
But which is why they yelled at her, don't do this again. So if someone has, if they
well,
knew
they care
coming,
about her. You know, you try to talk people out of things, but, you know.
But not when I'm having a dinner party with my friends.
But why did he go from calm? This is Mikey's question, right? Why
did
he go from calm at what was it? Maybe 1:30? No.
Why was he? Because he called the publicists like pretty close to when Dr. Carroll was coming. So it's like you sound upset on the phone, and then you're immediately calm. I don't.
Well, I think he knew he had to be professional in that moment. Of course, he was upset at first, the initial shock of her dying. But he is a doctor, and he is a
professional.
Well,
let's review the timeline.
That is understandable.
Okay, because I mean that's an interesting point talking about calmness going to feeling really, you know, very professional, you know, as JJ, I mean, Krasinski calls it.
Excuse
and so the thing
me,
is,
Rose,
wait,
I have one more question. Why is it okay that everyone seems to think it's okay for Dr. Stowe to be the investigator? He comes into the scene, he investigates, there's some bottles, he calls the doctor in, he investigates, he pronounces her dead for suicide before the coroner does, like, he instigates the press releases. Why is it okay that this doctor decides to take over the whole situation, and no one seems to care that, oh, he's deciding that she's already died of suicide before we've even decided it. Like, why is that?
Why are you not thanking the doctor for taking over the situation so that the press doesn't have a chance?
She's dead.
So that the press doesn't have a chance to spin the story out. You want it to be a dignified memorial. This is somebody that cares for Ava.
Oh, but nobody cares so much. She has no family. Lay there naked so that when the police arrive, when they finally get there, it's okay.
She has no friends.
Always arguing. Come on.
There's not an argument. Everyone, we need to speak. We just want to speak. Go ahead, Adelaide.
There is a point that if he cared about her that much, why would he just dismiss her when she called him? And I agree about the part of not even bothering to cover her up before you went and began drinking. I mean, that's so bizarre. I'm sorry. That's terribly bizarre.
Bizarre, but not uncomfortable if your relationship was more than a doctor-patient relationship.
Sure. Yeah.
Seeing her naked is nothing out of the norm.
You're going to leave a naked, dead woman in another room, and you're going to go do laundry and drink and not call the police? You're going to let them in?
We're tampering with the body and putting a sheet over her and maybe a pillow under her head, propping up her feet.
He touched all the bottles. He's already tampered the crime scene. It's been tampered. Who has the most to gain here? He does, Rose. But you know why? He's in her press conferences. He's deciding her deals for her.
What does he have to gain if she's dead? Nothing.
Right.
She's no longer the client.
Yes. I just want us to sort of like bring it back to just understanding what the arguments here are. Because look, okay, so the state says... So the state's saying that the decision to call the press agents before the police was to establish a narrative, to control the narrative, motive. And there was
spin control,
right?
Absolutely.
And then the defense is saying that the decision was an attempt to preserve her legacy. So, I mean, how do we...
Well, I think that makes sense.
And wait, timeline. I agree we need to look at the timeline.
Yeah, let's just
3:45 was when he
called... When was she pronounced dead again?
Well, 1:15 was when... Dr. Stowe got there.
Okay. And he said that she had been at least, dead for 2 hours.
By looking at
a professional doctor.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And then.
What was the term he used?
Rigor mortis. Pebasus was called at 3:45, but that was Eastern.
Well, they're on our coast. So 3:45 was fine. And then the West Coast publicist was called shortly thereafter.
Yeah. So it was all the same.
Around
time.
The same time, so first East.
So they
then
were
west.
Called after Dr. Carroll was called.
Yes.
So.
About 45
so
minutes after.
They went from very calm when Dr. Carroll was there.
Maybe the alcohol kicked in.
Your point.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike.
No, I've never been in a crime scene either, so I don't know how I would react, but at the same time, I do find it a little suspicious as. Adelaide was going to say.
Oh, go ahead. You can
just
finish.
Oh, no, that's...
I was just wanted to make the point that, you know, I don't think it is suspicious that he called the press. You know, he has a relationship with her. He cares about her. He wants to see her legacy, you know.
You know, I'd be very
intact.
Upset if my gynecologist called my press agent. That's weird. I'm
he's
sorry.
Not, he's not your gynecologist.
OBGYN.
If they call my press agent, that's weird. He has those are clearly some boundary
overdose.
Issues.
Listen, this is we have to keep it strictly to the facts. And the facts are the facts
that's
are
the funniest thing I've heard all day.
The facts
Dr.
are that he
Stowe,
always had
not,
trouble with boundaries.
Can we not make this light, okay?
Sorry.
We're putting a man that he could go to jail and someone's
this
dead.
Is a man's life.
It's definitely not a laughing matter, but the fact that we want to lament Dr. Stowe as the bad guy is laughable to me. He had the most to gain if Ava was alive.
Sure.
He had physical notes, fact that he wanted to take her off of the medication that in fact killed her. She filled a prescription that was prescribed earlier in the week, the day before. She had signs of crying out that, hey, something's wrong. She's asking for oxygen. Mm-hmm. She's mad that her friend woke up late. Nobody's seeing the signs. She made a call to one of her friends. I love you. I love you. I love you. I'm going to miss you guys. Nobody's putting these facts together.
Wait,
from somebody
she didn't
who
say,
attempted.
I'm going to miss you guys. She didn't.
That is.
She said, tell them I said goodbye in the third person.
She was. Yeah. No.
So,
but
nobody.
You just referred to yourself in third person, and if
and
I was
also
sleep,
had drinking
yourself?
Problems, so maybe we should listen to me when we're talking about Ava, somebody who's close to that. No, I am not a star, but I have my problems. I've seen my share of psychiatrists. Think about the situation. I'm not going to say I've attempted suicide, but she has 4 times before. Nobody's bringing up the facts. It's all hearsay. If you're going to stick to the facts, this man is innocent.
He has the most to gain with her death. And let me tell you why. Because if she's out of the way, she's clearly, she cannot be controlled with the enemas or the medication that we two doctors are giving her. She's calling and lamenting and asking for help. She can't be controlled about the things that she's booking, even though I am going to her press conferences and trying to wrangle her contracts for her. It would be great
if
she's out of the way.
He's pulling her out of the gutter.
Oh, no. He has not. In fact, she has not been to the studio. She's been late several times. The last dailies, they were trying to, they're $15 million over debt because
that's
she didn't show up.
That's in the past.
How many pills did Dr. Carroll prescribe? Was
25.
It
25.
But she overdosed with how many? Was it
76.
Was it 76?
It was 60. 60 pills. So if Dr. Stowe was trying to wean her off, he would have had to have prescribed how many?
In a wean off, there's no exact number. But think about what you just
said.
Okay,
sorry.
If they found
60
pills.
Day.
Mikey, think about it. 60 yeah. pills. She was only prescribed 25 by Carol, which she took the day before. So there has to be some kind of hoarding going on.
Oh, my God. It's 11 o'clock. Can we just go back to the...
I think we're just tired. If you have a suicidal patient, to let them have their own medication, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I can't listen.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Call it tonight.
It doesn't make sense to me either.
My brain is fried.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't think
Thank
we're
you,
getting anywhere
Adelaide.
Tonight. Let's just call it, you guys. I want
to
go to bed.
Okay. All right. All right. Is that how everyone feels? Everyone wants.
I think we're getting somewhere. I think we're actually getting somewhere.
There's a lot of ambiguity in investigations, witnesses, recollections, suspicions. One thing that is never ambiguous is medicine. Next time on Deliberations.
I was the coroner appointed due to Michael's case.
Finding probable suicide?
I think that was sketchy.
Today's cast. Jury. Cammie Middleton. Brandon Lamberty. Teru Hara. Tony Love. Chris Markle. And Becky Brown. Courtroom. Dan Lerner. Nora Fisher. George Cardulius. Taylor Dillon. Madison Spear, and Jen Robbins. On the next Jury Break, I'm speaking to you personally about my history with Marilyn Monroe and explaining how Luke Yenke's revelations from our last Jury Break impact the theories pertaining to her death. See you then.